brute force. If it doesn't work, you're just not using enough. You're listening to Soft Web Radio, Special Operations Military News, and Straight Talk with the Guys in the Community.
SoftRep.com, on time, on target. Before we get into this episode, just wanted to address something really quickly. You may have noticed that I changed around the intro you're hearing behind me. You may have heard it on the last episode and what you're hearing right now. Jason Delgado resigned from doing the podcast earlier this week. He's working on some other endeavors. I believe he might even be doing some stuff at SoftRep TV in the future. So he's still part of the family here. But for now, the podcast duties will be myself and, of course, after a very long hiatus shooting the show on Nikola Tesla for the Discovery Channel, Jack Murphy will be back. And I know he's been greatly missed, not just by you guys, but by myself as well. I love having him in here. I love hearing his expertise. So in a couple episodes, you'll be hearing from him. With that, going to get right into this episode. Really great having another in-studio guest for the first time, Jared Ross, Green Beret Weapons Sergeant, who currently runs Rockwell Tactical out of Central Pennsylvania. Let's get right into it. And we are live, ladies and gentlemen. Ian Scotto here. I'm in studio for the first time with Jared Ross, who's a veteran of the Army. And were you saying Marines or?
No.
You just know a lot of Marines.
Yes. Yeah. I know a lot of them.
So you have, your background is really as a Green Beret Weapons Sergeant, but you've done a lot more than just that. So the first thing actually, as we're live here, and by the way, if for those checking out the video, please like it, share it. We're going to cover a lot of great stuff here. But yeah, the first thing I think would be getting into your background. This is my first time meeting you myself. So.
Okay. I grew up in Pennsylvania, southern Pennsylvania, in Lancaster County. I had a pretty normal childhood, I thought. My grandpa bought me a BB gun when I was five. I had a .22 rifle when I was 12 and hit all those, you know, good earmarks growing up as a kid. I always wanted to join the military, but every time I went to go and talk to recruiters, honestly, it just didn't feel right. Something I always wanted to do, but it just didn't feel right. So I started doing other jobs, and I eventually started working for UPS.
And we're talking about, like, what age?
This is at this point, I was an old man. I was around 25 when I started working for UPS.
Okay.
So working for UPS, met my future wife, and I was fast-tracking there. I was a manager working for them in Lancaster when now, as an old man at the age of 27, 9/11 happened. And that same feeling that was telling me, nah, don't go in, now is telling me, now's the time to go in. So I felt as my moral obligation as a citizen to go enlist and go shoot people in the face. And that's what I did. I went to the 82nd Airborne, and I was only there a couple of months before I did my first deployment to Afghanistan. And that's where I first experienced working around, you know, soft guys. And that was, had some really cool experiences there. 6 months after that deployment, I was in Iraq again with the 82nd. And had tons of fun. And then after that, when I got back from that deployment, is when I tried out for, went to selection, SF selection, got selected and spent the rest of my active duty time, you know, there in Special Forces.
Did you have that dream of being a guy who goes into soft like a lot of guys do, or was it just you wanted to be in the military?
I wanted to serve, and you know, I've always wanted to be in the military. And that was just the right time for me, when to go in. And I always wanted to challenge myself and try a little bit harder. I really have a nice, warm spot in my heart for UPS because I told my boss, hey, I need to go in. And he told me, you've got 4 years. So we'll hold your job for 4 years. Go do what you need to do. And after being with the 82nd for about 2.5 years, you know, with those deployments I got under my belt, I decided, you know, I need to try out. I'll kick myself if I don't try out. So then after I was selected, I was like, well, I guess I got to do this route. So then I, you know, I stayed in for a while and had a lot of fun. I went to 5th group and had a lot of fun there.
Yeah, that sounds like one of those things where it's just like you don't want to live with these regrets if it's something that you really want to do with your life.
Yeah.
So, just right after 9/11, it was the type of thing where, because I've heard a lot of guys on the show say that that same type of thing where it was like, this is my time, mm-hmm. got to do it.
That's really what it was. I saw 9/11. It took place, what, on a Tuesday?
Yeah.
I got married that following Saturday and then talked to the recruiter the following week. So my wonderful wife, who was marrying a up-and-coming rising superstar, you know, making decent money, found herself a couple months later then married to, you know, Private Ross, who we had to liberate MREs at the end of the month to make sure we had food. But that was a good time and glad I did it. It was something I had to do and, yeah, had tons of fun.
So why weapons sergeant? Why was that the field you chose to go into?
I grew up, you know, in the gun culture. I started going to gun shows when I was a kid. I always loved weapons.
Pennsylvania also is really big in that culture.
Yeah, so. Yeah, absolutely. That's what we would do, you know, for fun. Go to gun shows and hang out with my buddies and play with weapons. When I actually, after I was selected, they told me that they wanted me to be an 18 Delta, a medic sergeant. So I knew better. I knew, well, I don't know if that's for me, but I tried it and I made it almost to the completion of the Delta course. I am a SOC medic, but then I washed out during the surgeries portion of that school, which is at the very end. I had like 3 weeks left of the class of that course. And then thankfully they saw something still redeeming in me and sent me to where I wanted to go to begin with, over to the Bravo committee. And thank goodness, because I have had lots of fun doing that.
That's awesome, man.
Yeah.
And just growing up with guns, it was like you knew that this was going to be my specialty.
Yeah, absolutely. There was going through the weapons course, and there were times when the instructors, I noticed they were putting out incorrect information about some of the specifics of some of the weapons. It's just, you know, I thought it was funny here. I thought I was going to the world's premier small arms school. And because I've been around the stuff my whole life, I was picking up on some of the stuff that wasn't quite accurate. But anyways, it was a good school, good time.
That's cool. Yeah, it's an interesting thing because, you know, Brandon, who's the CEO of the company, sniper instructor, he didn't grow up around weapons, has talked about that. And I think just in the military learned that this was something he had a gift at doing. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what happens. Sometimes I guess you do go in and you know, this is something I'm skilled at. This is an interest of mine. And for other guys, you know, they pick up on something new, I guess.
Yeah.
Which is cool to see. You were telling me that you just ended a 6-month deployment in August to Jordan. And we get a lot of, you know, different backgrounds on here with Afghanistan, with Iraq. Mm-hmm. I don't know a whole lot about Jordan, so I'd like to hear all about that.
Okay. I'll give you a little bit more about my background, and then I'll get into that.
Yeah, go for it.
Was with 5th Group up until July of 2012. And as soon as I left 5th, I immediately joined 20th Group, which is one of the National Guard groups. And that's who I'm still with. And I've been able to do some fun stuff with them. And that was with 20th Group that I just did this deployment to Jordan. And that was a very different deployment compared to everything else that I've done in the past, the JSETs and other stuff that I've done. It was interesting. We were there for, you know, a good period of time, you know, 6 months. Got to work with a lot of the, a lot of the Jordanians, and neat people, neat place, and a very. I didn't realize how pivotal it was to, you know, as an ally for us until I was there and starting to see some of the stuff there on the ground. One of the things that, since we were National Guard, what we were really able to do is we were able to free up some of the my brothers in 5th Group, allow them to, who were there as well, to go do a little bit more exciting things. So we were picking up one of their old missions as far as training some of the locals. Ask me a question. That'd be better. So you ask me.
I'm just wondering if there's any cool war stories there.
Not anything really that I feel comfortable talking about as far as cool war stories.
Is it also because you're still active duty, you kind of have to be careful about what you could talk about?
Yeah, there's definitely that too. Yeah.
Is there any stuff in the past from combat experience you can get into?
Sure. I don't know. I don't have to think about that. We'll come back to that question, and I'll get to that. But what I realize is how important Jordan, at least with that trip, how important Jordan is to us, and keeping that area free and keeping that area stabilized. If we pull out, if we lose our relationship with them, then it's the whole place can just spiral out of control. King Abdullah is a really good ally.
Yeah,
to the U.S.
I remember when all the stuff was coming about King Abdullah's background. There was like a lot of praise in just the social media field, mm-hmm. and all that from probably more so people on the right for what he's done and his whole background. Yeah. What do you think of his background?
Oh, he loves SOF, so he's put a lot of money in trying to develop and trying to upgrade his country's soft element. He's put a lot of money, and we've supported him in building up Casadic, which is the big training center there, where every nation in that area that's reputable, they come in there and they train. They also hold the international. He supported and had built the international warrior, international warrior competition annually. And some of the guys from my team and myself were participated in that this year. And that was an interesting experience, being able to represent and to participate in that kind of an environment. It was
what exactly is that?
Well, we really didn't know. We were kind of voluntold a few weeks before it took place that they wanted a team to represent us. So we did what we could to prepare for it. But it was really a lot more of a lot more like American Ninja Warrior with guns, as opposed to actually real, I think a real test of soft capabilities. So a lot of countries that treated it like a game and stuff, they did really well while they were there. China is one of the ones that I think they won it this year. Not I think, they won it this year. And because they treated it like a game and cut a lot of corners and did interesting stuff. An example. So one of the problems or one of the stages was you had to send in a small man team, go into a multi-story building, engage all the shoot targets, wearing pro masks, and there's smoke in there, and then rescue a body, which was a dummy, and recover it and pull it out. So us and other units took it pretty serious. We're wearing our real pro masks, and we're wearing real canisters and going in there. But then you have other teams like the before mentioned one, go in with airsoft masks with canisters with holes punched through it so they can breathe through it. So they have the appearance of, but they're treating it like a game. And so that was interesting to see that kind of the way they treated stuff. The biggest compliment I think I received that week, and some of our other guys received that week, is we just completed a stage. We were tired. The other guys just complete a stage, and we're walking past some, believe they're Greek special forces.
Yeah, we have a Greek guy on our staff, Bill. There's the Amphibious Raiders Battalion. I'd have to look at his background again, because I've mentioned it before, but yeah, there is Greek soft, of course.
So as we're walking by, I kind of nodded, and he kind of nodded, and then they stopped, and the guy came over to me, and he pointed at me, and he said, "You operations, me operations. China,
I like that.
Whatever, just kind of nonchalantly, because they were, not treating it for real. Yeah, and as a consequence, we're winning.
I'm looking at Bill's background, or Vasilis from our staff, who's a 5-year Greek soft veteran. Definitely check out his articles, but he served in 35th Mountain Raiders Battalion and the Zeta Amphibious Raiders Battalion. So that was what it's something. So yeah, they do have their soft background, which is cool to see, even though they're not necessarily combat veterans a lot of the time, because not a lot happening in Greece in terms of that, at least.
Yeah, but he was the real deal. And that's really was the coolest thing. The competition, whatever, but the coolest thing was being able to meet and hang out with and just, you know, interact a little bit with a lot of these really good soft guys from around the world.
That's yeah, I think that it's just, it's a global community, and I've seen that ever since coming on board here. It's more than just America, Canada, you know, you can't see it in the stream, which, by the way, if you're checking out the stream, I apologize for the darkness here. I don't know what's up. It was, like, lighter before, and then I changed around some setting I'm going to have to fuck around with. But anyway.
It's all me.
I don't know. But, like, up on here, you guys can't see it in the stream, but we have, like, the Polish Grom, who Brandon has worked with. And, yeah, it's cool to see that there's that global presence of
Grom,
guys.
Yeah, Grom, they're some good guys.
Yeah, that's what I've heard.
Yeah.
I've heard a lot of great stuff. So for those of you watching the stream, once again, because I know there's people jumping in and out, I'm here with Jared Ross, Green Beret, Weapons Sergeant, still active duty. I'm getting a ton of questions coming in. And, you know, we'll get into your current background or current happenings right now with Rockwell Tactical, because I do want to hear about that.
Okay.
But I'm looking at some questions coming in, and actually a few from our staff, like Christian Prosser, the gear guy in me, needs to ask the SF medic what are his preferred tourniquets and what are their are there any that he considers junk gear and that's just marketed well? Good question.
That is a great question. He wants to start some fist fights, I'm sure. You can get two deltas in the room and same background, same experience, and they'll fight all day about what's best. Me, I really like the wide soft tees. That's what I carry. And I like it, one, because it's wide, it's easy to use, but it's all metal. The most popular ones out there are the CAT tourniquets, and CATs are great for what they are when they're new out of the package. I've just seen so many of them exposed to sunlight. They get brittle, and they snap, and they break. So I really like the wide soft. I also like, though I know it's not popular with a lot of people, the SWAT tee. I like that because I think it's a really good jack of all trades. You can have that child who, you know, their legs are this big around that these normal tourniquets, they won't work on them because they're too big. And you can use that SWAT tee on a child. You can use it on a canine, on an animal. You can also use it on really large people. And it's a good jack of all trades. It's not perfect, though. If you don't apply it correctly, then it can slip. But those are probably my two favorite ones that I like. There's... How's that?
Good question from Christian. Scott Whitner, who's also from the site. And we do have other people watching, of course, but those are the guys asking questions, so I'm going to get to them. Yes, Scott Whitner, who's a huge gear guy, says, ask him about his preferred weapons platforms in EDC. Good question for you, because you definitely are a gear guy.
Yeah, EDC, I like... that's a good question. I prefer the MMP. I like the MMP in 9. That's what I usually carry. Obviously, I
feel, in New York,
feel
right?
Naked because I left the great state of Pennsylvania to come here today. And, yeah, very
to
naked.
The police state of
that,
New York.
Darn right. So I like carrying that, but then also for the longest time, and I still carry quite often, a Glock 19. I'm not a really huge fan of the Glock platform. They're just like an AK, though. They're a workhorse, and they'll go all day long. One of the primary reasons that I've carried the Glock for so long is because 75% of all of our students, whether it's military, law enforcement, or civilians, are carrying Glocks. So I just need to make sure I'm, you know, a master of carrying that.
Brandon Webb carries the Glock. Yeah. And says that the main reason is that one of the main reasons, I'm sure it's not the only, is that there's no safety. He's like, I don't like having a safety.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's the same with the M&P. At least the one I carry doesn't have a safety.
Yeah.
So that's, as far as pistols, those are my two favorite ones. There's a small company by me in Pennsylvania called Viper Holsters. He's a custom Kydex maker. And I'm sure his quality is just as good as a lot of other ones. He just happens to live close to me, and I really like his stuff. He has what he calls a hybrid holster, and that's the one I use most often. It's a Kydex holster that has leather attached to the one side on the outside. So it's nice when I'm carrying appendix or whatever to have the leather up against, you know, my skin or my body instead of the hard Kydex. So that's my preferred holster. And in fact, with this last trip, I carried more concealed there and much more low profile than really any other trip that I've been on. And that's what I... Awesome.
This is the beauty of not being in an actual studio, is that, you know, you just hear the sounds of New York in the background.
So that's what I used was that, you know, that holster. And then, of course, see some other specific stuff. There's another company, I believe, in Oregon called Snake Eater.
Okay.
And they make some good pouches and stuff. They make a really, really cool mag pouch for pistol, and it's one of those I don't know, like the yoga stretchy pants. I don't know the material, but it's, you know, so it's really tight.
Okay.
But what's nice is he also has a weave of Kydex in there, so there's a little bit of form to it. Enough form so it's easy to put magazines in, but also stiff enough so if I need to like charge my pistol, I can use it. It'll catch and you know, use it on the sights or whatever. So I dig that. I carry that as well. And then always have at a minimum a SWAT tee on me. And then depending on where I'm going, I might have more medical stuff for my EDC. So there's a little bit of my EDC.
Yeah. So I'm clearly here in the studio with a gear guy, which is awesome. So if you have any gear questions, I think this is the guy to ask. And we have people watching on YouTube, on Twitch. So I'm looking at all the questions. On YouTube, Master Chief 167 asks, and this is a good one from what you were saying earlier.
Yeah.
Can soft guys easily pick each other out in other countries?
That's a good question. If I say yes, then it means we're good because we're that highly trained. If I say no, that's because we're good because we blend in. I guess it really depends. From my experience, it depends on what we're doing and the environment that we're in.
Yeah. So it's not like, I feel like some guys would be like, you could just smell it on some guy that he's seen combat, he's seen some action, or, you know.
Yeah.
I would assume.
It depends on the individual.
Yeah.
One of my buddies, I won't mention his name, but one of my buddies from fifth group who's done a lot, if I didn't know that, I would just think he's just a nice old family man with a bunch of kids. I would have had no idea that he's had so many... He's been in so many direct action missions, and the guy just blends in. So really, I guess it depends on the individual.
It's cool. I'm looking at all the comments out here. We apparently have friends of yours watching. So,
oh, yeah?
Yeah, Matt Sadoon says, yo, Jared, long time no see. Glad to see you doing well.
Cool.
Yeah, we have big Phil Campion watching. So, yeah, keep the questions coming. I'm going to check them out. I'm going to see what you guys want to ask, but of course I want to get into what you're doing right now. You're currently the founder and head instructor at Rockwell Tactical, mm-hmm. based out of Central Pennsylvania, which we were just talking about, it brings principle-based training to mm-hmm. students, I should say. And by the way, the website is rockwelltactical.com. I'll give that out again. But yeah, get into how you started this company and just sure. the origin of it and what you guys are doing.
Sure. It really goes along with just who I am and, you know, all my past experiences. I'll start with when I was going through the Q course at Bragg. We lived off post, and I went in one morning to go to PT, and I, you know, left my wife. We had a couple of small kids at the time, and she wished me well. I left. She was almost asleep when she heard somebody trying to break into the house. And because we had talked and because she grew up actually in Staten Island and she didn't grow up around firearms, but when we were dating, her attitude was kind of like, well, I kind of like you. I guess I'll tolerate the firearms. I guess I'll tolerate you taking me to the range. And then when we were married, it was the same attitude. I guess I kind of like you. I kind of want this marriage thing to work. So I'll put up with and I'll tolerate the firearms in the house and learning how to use them and stuff just because you're so insisting in it. So I'm gone 5:30 or so in the morning. And she hears the noise, and because I had worked with her and because we had talked about stuff, she immediately knew what to do, and she grabbed the Mossberg shotgun from underneath the bed. She knew she had to get out of the bedroom, and she had to walk down the hall to be a barrier to prevent anyone who's coming in the house from getting into the hallway and possibly getting to our children's bedrooms. And if they're in the hallway, then she wouldn't even be able to shoot because she'd be afraid to possibly missing them and hitting the children's bedrooms. So she walked on down the hall, and luckily for her and luckily for them, they had a lookout looking through one of our windows into the living room and saw the hallway and saw this pissed off redheaded woman walking down the hall with a shotgun. He yelled, and she heard them take off and run. So she posted herself there, got out on the phone, called 911, waited for the cops to arrive. And the door that they're trying to get in was open. And basically, if she would have hesitated at all, it would have been a very different morning because the door was open. They had already made their entry. They could have, you know, who knows what would have happened. Yeah. So with that experience, I became pretty passionate about teaching and preparing people. I finished the Q course, was active with fifth group, and I came home to Pennsylvania on leave, and a buddy of mine knew I was there, a friend from, you know, from growing up, and he said, hey man, you're a Green Beret, can you meet me at this range and show me some stuff? So I agreed and I met him there, but he told a friend who told a friend who told a friend. So I show up expecting me and my buddy, and it's me and like 10 other guys. So it was the very first kind of like impromptu class where I started teaching these guys. So then it just became a habit. Every time I came home with pass or leave, I would contact him or some other people and we would get together and I would teach them stuff. I realized there's a huge vacuum in that area in Pennsylvania. There's a lot of really good instructors and companies teaching the NRA stuff, and that's good for what it is. But as far as like more advanced stuff, there's a pretty big vacuum there. So late 2010, I decided to take a chance, created the company, incorporated, and started doing all logistical work to build in preparation for me leaving active duty. And I left July of 2012. And then when I got back, spent the rest of 2012 getting stuff set up, and then 2013 is when we really started building the Rockwell classes and started teaching. And since then, every year we've just, you know, taught more classes, taught more variety of stuff. I started at first as just a lot of soft guys, a lot of my buddies who were helping me. And then the past couple of years, I started reaching out to other people. So now we have some law enforcement working for us, some Marines working for us. I even, you know, lowered myself and got an Army Ranger now, you know, working with us. He's a really good dude. But just tried to, you know, to grow the company and become more well-rounded. So that's kind of, you know, how we started.
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, the story with your wife is absolutely crazy, but it's interesting that it took that to make you want to go into the field, because it's actually a pretty natural fit. I mean, we have so many guys on the podcast who are former soft and then do start these training facilities. So it's like a natural thing to do.
Yeah.
But I guess maybe that was like the kick in the ass that I could do a good job with this, because, you know, you're training someone from absolutely no experience to being able to handle a worst case scenario.
And that's really what it was. With that experience, I became very passionate. We're all citizens of the greatest country on earth.
Yeah.
And just because I've have this background and Uncle Sugar has paid for my training doesn't mean I'm better than anybody else. So that's, you know, you read our catchphrase there, principle-based training. That's what we're trying to teach, is these correct principles. And we're trying to get good training out to good people. Because if and when that moment arises in someone's life, like my wife, I want them to be able to handle it. I want them to be able to, you know, defend themselves and defend their loved ones. My wife that morning, even though she didn't have to shoot, she experienced combat in a very emotional, psychological, and very physical way, similar to anything I've experienced overseas. She luckily didn't have to pull the trigger, but she would have. If those guys would have, she would have saw them, they hadn't been for that lookout, she was ready to just start pumping and clicking and,
wow,
and, you know, eliminate that threat.
What you were saying about the NRA instructors in Pennsylvania, I could relate, because I am by no means like a big firearms guy, but I own a shotgun because I live on Long Island and I'm actually allowed to do that. I don't live here in the city. So this was prior to being with SOFREP. You know, I wanted to make sure I was at least sufficient on the very basics. Got an NRA instructor, took a couple of classes, and then was good to go. The interesting thing for me, though, was, you know, this guy definitely knew his shit, was able to show me, you know, what to do in terms of the basics. But look, not like a fit guy by any means. and then starts talking about, well, if you need to clear a room and blah, blah. And I'm starting to think to myself, because this was prior working at SOFREP, but I did know some soft guys, just who I knew from radio. And I feel like unless you've been there and you've done that, I don't, you're not really the type of person I want to hear from on that, because you don't really know how you would react in that scenario. You're probably just repeating something you heard from someone who is an actual expert. Like, if I want to go to that extent with training, I want to hear from you or Jeff Gonzalez or our friend Jason Delgado. Those are the guys who could tell me, you know, what you could do in those scenarios, I would think.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I feel like that's why it's important to have the background that you do to train people with the proficiency that you do.
Well, one of the things I've done too is I've once I was joined on with 20th, I started volunteering and teaching at SFAWC, which I don't know if you're familiar with that. But
yeah,
that's the Special Forces Advanced Urban Combat.
Okay.
And we hold that 3 times a year. So I started, you know, already knew how to do stuff, but going there and you learn so much more as an instructor. So I started learning more stuff, more things there. And we I was able to do it a couple times a year. So I was, with that experience, I've taken, you know, some of the classes, some things we do is teaching people, you know, with the example of my wife, how to clear rooms and how to defend themselves in case there's a home invasion. The smartest thing usually to do is to stay put in a room, and you know, that's probably the safest thing to do. But there are different circumstances. Like with my wife, there are you know, kids. You need to get to those bedrooms. You need to take care of those kids. You need to protect your loved ones. So there's a time and a place for that civilian to move, and that's what I've done, and that's what some of our classes have done. We've taken those principles that I've learned on the operation side, and then we've applied them to, you know, as an individual, how a person can clear their home, or how a couple, i.e. a husband and wife, can work together to safely clear their house. And that's exactly what, you know, what you're saying. That's what we've done with a lot of our classes, try to take that real world experience and things that we know that work in that environment, and then tailor it and tweak it a little bit to work in a civilian environment.
Well said, man. So once again, the website, if you want to get trained by Jared and your group, it's rockwelltactical.com, facebook.com/rockwelltactical, @rockwelltactical on Instagram. And as we're wrapping things up here, I'd like to get some more questions, because people love hearing from someone who really knows their shit on weapons and asking the questions. So, Donald Rutledge, do y'all use a number 4 shot in the Mossberg?
That's a good question. Well, depends. And what application talking about? If for classes, we use all sorts of stuff, a bird shot for a lot of stuff until we get specific for patterning and some of the other drills. But for home defense, use, you know, there's a lot of different options. Use what works best for you.
Cool. You know, it's funny. Someone is commenting on the darkness of the studio. I'm doing a Power of Thought podcast with Brandon later. Hopefully I can figure this all out. So I do apologize once again for how dark the studio itself is. Actually not that dark. It's the it's the settings on the camera. But I'll see if there's anything else coming in. As I said, there's people who know you on here, which is pretty cool. Oh, what's your favorite long-range rifle? That's from Don Bonnet.
I'm not a long-range guy. Okay. I've never been to Sodic. We have a couple guys that I specifically have brought on Rockwell that teach long-range stuff. Everything that I've done has been CQB or you know, mid-range stuff. So I don't feel qualified to answer, hey, this is the best thing out there.
Cool. Hey, well, that's good. Right. I think it's important to know what your lane is. And I mean, are there people that you think are the go-to guys if for
yeah.
this?
Yeah, Jason is one of them. He's a really good guy. And then, yeah, I'll use his name. There's another guy I was going to say, but he's a little bit more protective than I am, since he's still operational.
Well, you do have people who might become clients, because Nathan Sanner is saying he's interested in classes. If you're in the PA area, go for it. And he asks, do you do any other CQB training?
Yes, we do stuff that we've dedicated classes for law enforcement. We do CQB training, like I've said, a lot of different classes, 1 day, 2 day, multiple days, with teaching different principles of CQB, basically for a husband and a wife or for defending the home. I don't know of any specific laws, but there's a line there, the one that I'm not willing to cross as far as teaching everybody. I'm not going to teach 4-man CQB just to everybody. I'll save that for, you know, the military or for law enforcement. So we primarily get into 1 and 2-man, you know, again, a husband and wife clearing and defending their home.
All right. You told me that I could go back to it at some point. Yeah. So as we're wrapping up, any good combat stories?
I'll tell one.
Go for it. People love this stuff.
So. And this is one that, if ever there's a scene of my life that I want to see in a movie, that this is it. This was Iraq, and this would have been 2004. And I wasn't yet soft. I was still 82nd. And we had set up an improvised blocking position. And it was just me and a couple guys in one Humvee, another couple guys in a Humvee. And we were basically had funneled people through. And we were checking out cars just randomly. And this was back in the days when we didn't have, at least we didn't have gun trucks. We didn't have up armored. This was like cargo Humvees with Mad Max armor welded on. And I had a saw. And being the guy that I am growing up reading all the Vietnam books, One of the things I learned from those old timers in Vietnam is that some guys would have a 20 round or a 30 round mag loaded with nothing but tracers, like a team leader or someone. So if they get into a firefight, they use the tracers to, you know, to mark a target where everyone would direct their fire. Just a technique. So me being the crazy kid that I was, I had my 200 round saw drum and I had manipulated the rounds. So like the first 30, 40 rounds was straight tracer. And then in like every other round was tracer. And then kind of, near the end of it, it was normal 1 and 4. And then like the last 10 rounds again was straight tracer. So I know the drum was just about out. So I had this drum and it was dark out. And it's kind of boring. Cars coming by, and then about 300 meters up the road, some guys didn't know we were there, and there was a car with a driver and two shooters. The shooters got out, they went into a cafe, and because there's so much going on, we didn't see them either. And then they went to a cafe and assassinated somebody. So we heard the AK rounds going off. We saw them jump in the car, and they came cruising towards us. So then as they're coming towards us, somebody yelled to stop. They didn't stop. So then I lit them up with the saw. So again, it was like straight laser beams, nothing but tracers into the car. And so there's this big volume of noise and then silence. And what was crazy is, I don't know if you guys can see in there, but the Humvees were kind of set diagonal. So there's a lot of noise and then no noise. And this car just slowly creeped by, shot up full of holes, slumped over bodies, all the tracers burning inside. So this orange glow, and you just saw, you know, stuff dripping out of things as this car slowly creeped by. And all of us like, you know, just in awe, you know, holy crap, as this thing just slowly creeped by, then stopped at a curb when it finally came to rest. So that was pretty wild.
I knew I'd get a badass combat story out of you, man. I'm sure there's a lot of that.
The epilogue to that one, the after story is when we cleared the car, there was an air freshener in there. And so there was three holes in this air freshener and there's this stuff on it. So I might have liberated the air freshener. I might have put it in my own car and occasionally had people driving, hey, do you smell that? What does it smell like? And they'd sniff it. I go, I don't know. Orange? No, it smells like death. And you know, that's what I did.
That's a nice little, I guess you would say, souvenir from pretty awesome time. you know, we're also on Twitch, so I'll get to maybe one last question here, unless there's other good ones. By the way, it's brighter now because the sun came out, so you guys could actually see what we look like. The Donut Goon, who has been watching every time we're on Twitch, which we appreciate, what do you think would be the best setup for a patrol rifle? I work in law enforcement and I'm looking to put a better kit together instead of just a vanilla AR.
Oh, that's a good question. I know a lot of law enforcement, a lot of departments, though, it's dictated to them what they can and what they can't have. But with your patrol rifle, you definitely want a flashlight of some kind. And I won't get into specifics, whether, you know, a Surefire or something else. There's good flashlights out there. But definitely get a flashlight. Definitely get a two-point sling. I've used the Vickers or the Blue Force. I've used the Proctor sling, and I dig the Proctor sling. I like that one. Frank, he's a pretty cool guy.
Very cool.
And I've also used the VTAC sling, and they're all pretty much the same sling, just the different flavor of the same type of thing. So you get a good 2-point sling. I'm a really big fan of the Grip Stop. It's the greatest hand stop out there. Now, maybe tomorrow someone might invent something better, but for the past couple of years, the Grip Stop is the greatest hand stop, hands down, on a rifle. Any more patrol rifles or rifles themselves, they don't look right unless you have a Grip Stop on it. So there's just a couple things to do it. Make sure you get some kind of a flash hider. I like Smith Vortex on mine because it's a fighting gun. It's your patrol rifle. You're not going to be using it in competition, so there's no need to have a brake on it or something that's going to throw the big ball of flame out there. So, you know, get a flash hider. And on top of that, you know, get a good red dot. Of course, there's the aim points are real popular. I've used an EOTech forever on my work guns. I know they got a pretty bad, you know, people are pretty, you know, they have a bad rep right now, and I guess they're going away, but I haven't had any issues with mine, though a lot of people have had issues with theirs. Also, there's a newer company called Hollow Sun. It's a foreign company, and they make some okay optics, and on this last trip, I actually had a Hollow Sun that I was expecting to destroy, and we put it on some of our work guns, and a lot of different guys on my team used it and just to test it out, and it actually held up really well. Hollow Sun is very cost-effective, too. So you'll get some kind of a sight like that.
I was going to say, as you're talking, sorry about the sun now all of a sudden being in your eyes. Should I close these as we're, you're all right?
I'm good.
Okay. Yeah. It's just funny. We went from being too dark to now it's super bright. Fuck, man. We got to get good lighting in here. We have more questions coming in, so I figure we'll get to them. Why not? Exactly. Don Bonnet, best home defense weapon.
Best home defense weapon? I'm going to cop out on that. Your best home defense weapon is the weapon you know how to handle the best. At the time, the best thing for my wife to use was that shotgun because she knew it the best. Now, she's actually very comfortable because after that experience, she was born again hard. So she carries all the time and she's pretty good. So now she would use her pistol. She likes an M&P as well. So that's what she'd go for. For myself, I would go for my AR. I know my AR better than any other weapon system. I can use it better. And I have ammunition appropriate to be used inside the house with it. So that's what I go to. And I think that's probably the best answer I can give. The best firearm, the best weapon for home defense is the one that you know and that you can handle the best.
Well said. James C., James C. Horn, do you travel to other states for classes? And if I have a local range, can a class be set up there?
Yes. Nice. So far, even though we're based in Pennsylvania, so far we've been as far north as New Hampshire, south as Florida, and west as Colorado to do classes. And we're always looking to go and meet new people and have a good time.
We have a very silly question up here on YouTube, and I'll ask it. Why not?
Sure, why not?
Sean Dunn asks, if I train with a .22 caliber version of a .556 rifle that I have, does that make me gay?
No. It doesn't make you gay.
And hey, here at Soft Rep, we have love for everybody. So no disrespect. All right, I think that covers a lot there, man. Okay. Check out RockwellTactical.com, Facebook.com/RockwellTactical, on Instagram at RockwellTactical. Let me take a sip of my water here before I tell you about all the awesome stuff that we have going on currently. So wanted to let you guys know, of course, as I do every episode, that as a reminder for those listening, for those watching the live stream, for a limited time, you can receive a 50% discounted membership to SoftRep TV, our channel that offers the most exclusive shows, documentaries, and interviews covering the most exciting military content today. SoftRep TV's premier show, Training Cell, follows former Special Operations Forces as they participate in the most advanced training in the country, everything from shooting schools, defensive driving, jungle and winter warfare, climbing, and much more. Again, you can watch this content by subscribing to SoftRep TV, and that's at softreptv.us. Go there right now. And take advantage of a limited time offer of 50% off your membership. So that's only $4.99 a month. Then, of course, we've been speaking about gear this whole time. We have the SoftRep Crate Club. You're definitely going to want to check that out ASAP. It's a subscription to get a box of badass tactical and survival gear delivered to your door every month. Of course, no firearms. I don't think that would really work. I mean, firearms accessories we have sent. Mm-hmm. But, we've talked about this on the podcast before, but we were surprised by this. We have a ballistic shield for a backpack that could stop any round. We were able to send that out to every state except for Connecticut. Connecticut, there's a law that you can't have, you basically can't have a ballistic shield. You can't have any shield that's going to stop bullets. It's some law from a while ago. So we had to send them we basically had to send them a go bag instead of, which is cool too.
Yeah.
But it's you know better than anyone with these gun laws. Every state has their own weird little laws that you have to follow. But I never thought that you couldn't send a, armor. And that's what it is, that you can't really have armor in Connecticut. Never would have thought that that was the case. Just interesting story about stuff that we've sent. And the kicker, of course, is all of the gear is handpicked and tested by former special ops guys, so you know you're getting quality gear that's going to work when you need it to. Crates we've sent in the past have included gear like custom knives, multi-tools, fire starters, EDC med kits, and other kick-ass stuff. You don't just get great gear with your subscription. You're also supporting a veteran-owned and run company. To subscribe and start getting your gear, visit crateclub.com. crateclub.us. We also have gift options available. That's crateclub.us. It's been awesome hanging with you, Jared. Any other stuff that you want to mention before we wrap this up? Any tips to end this off?
I will mention this. There is a really cool place, whether you train with us or you can actually, if you have your own group or whatever, you can actually rent the place. But it's a newer place up in northern Pennsylvania called the Shooter's Gauntlet, and it's about 2 square miles of training space. They have an 1,100-yard long range. They're putting in a 1,500-yard long range that should be completed in a couple months. Multiple ranges, and it's where we do all of our more advanced stuff. Car stuff, in cars, through cars, night stuff with night vision, jungle walks. The owner of the place said, hey, as long as it's legal, you can do whatever you want here. I don't care. Blow up a car, I could care less, as long as it's legal. So I know there's other people who are listening and who are watching who have their own training thing, and that's a good resource. So check those guys out. Talk to the owner. That might be a place. I know we use it a lot, but it might be a place for some of these other individuals or other companies to check out and use as well.
Awesome. Well, hope you guys are getting prepped for your new year, enjoyed Christmas and all of that. And we'll be back on Wednesday. You'll see a new episode up. Appreciate you coming in.
Happy to. Thank you.
Thanks.
You've been listening to Soft Rep Radio. New episodes up every Wednesday and Friday. For all of the great content from our veteran journalists, join us and become a Team Room member today at softrep.com. Follow the show on Instagram and Twitter at Soft Rep Radio. And be sure to also check out the Power of Thought podcast, hosted by Hurricane Group CEO and Navy SEAL sniper instructor, Brandon Webb.